I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, where students can conduct NASA research, produce an original play, or join an in-house marketing agency as early as their freshman year. More information is available at carthage.edu.
And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg, and I'm really excited that we can start today's program with a member of the staff at Carthage College, Adam Koenig, who is Director of Advancement and Alumni Programs at Carthage. And the reason I invited Adam to be part of the morning show is because I wanted to give him a chance to talk about something that was so exciting and moving. Not long ago on the campus of Carthage, when Carthage, in the midst of what is still a scary pandemic, managed to create for the newest graduates a really exciting commencement experience at a time when it is still not safe to gather thousands of people together into a single room the way we typically do for commencement. Adam is largely responsible for a really groundbreaking approach to commencement that I saw firsthand as a faculty volunteer, and by talking to a number of graduates and their families, I could tell that it really had a powerful and positive impact on everybody I talked to. But it was not an easy thing to create nor to implement, and I just wanted to give Adam Koenig an opportunity to talk about what he created, the kind of discussions that took place in terms of just how to do commencement and how to do it safely and in a way that would be exciting and satisfying and moving. Adam Koenig, we welcome you to the morning show.
Well, thank you so much, Greg, and thank you for that wonderful introduction. It's really humbling the way you kind of framed that, so I'm very happy to be here.
I think I neglected to mention that you have been at Carthage since 2019, so just over a couple of years, and a heck of a couple of years it's been, of course, since roughly half of your time at Carthage has been during this challenging COVID pandemic. Can you briefly summarize where you were before you came to Carthage?
Yeah, absolutely. So Carthage College is actually my first opportunity to work within higher education. The majority of my career was spent in brick and mortar retail, specifically the apparel business. So I worked for a retailer called H&M. Throughout that kind of decade long experience, you know, started as a part-timer in college and had the opportunity within that span of time to be in lots of positions, both in the creative design and display angle, the operations space, and also kind of the HR and management level at the end of my career. And those opportunities really kind of informed how I approach engaging audiences, because I had the privilege to travel all around the country and be part of some pretty significant launches and events and partnerships in major markets such as New York City. And a lot of those experiences have stayed with me and how I kind of approach the work here at Carthage.
Cool. What was it that drew you to this opportunity at Carthage? I mean, in what way did you see it folding nicely both into your gifts and into kind of what you had already done and done so very successfully?
Sure. Well, in that position, you know, there was a lot of travel where I was, this was my base, but, you know, I got to a point in my life where I really wanted to invest in the community in which I lived. And I understood I had this unique skill set, and in whatever way I could do to help, you know, benefit the community and those in it, I was looking for that kind of opportunity. And Carthage is definitely that place. It is such a powerful organization and such a blessing to work here. And I really am proud to be part of its vision in education and really enriching the Southeast Wisconsin region.
What is the scope of your responsibilities as Director of Advancement and Alumni Programs?
It can really manifest in a lot of different ways. I can be talking about experiences for one or two donors up to, you know, the 5,000 people we welcome back at commencement, which are graduates and their families. So in anything in between, and based on what the goals are and the size of that audience, you know, that strategy and how those experiences come to life looks very different, but, you know, we always try to be thoughtful and innovative at whatever size and capacity we're operating at.
Right. So you're, in a sense, to some extent, at least in the event planning business, and I should think it's in this exciting field, in part because you get to create wonderful things, but you also have to create wonderful things that can be done, that can be implemented. And I suspect that your involvement involves both. I mean, not only the creation and design, but then the bringing to reality, whatever it is that you have created or designed or planned. Is that right?
Yeah, I think when you are doing event-based engagement, there's always, in the lead up to that, the strategy and the goals and data sets that you use to create those experiences. And for me, I really see is I take that science and make it feel like alchemy. You know, when you get a group of people together, you want them to feel like it's this magical, effortless experience that they're having this really personal response to when actually everything was meticulously thought out for them to have that experience. And I think the kind of reactions you can get and the emotions you can inspire through that type of engagement can really have long lasting effects to, you know, deepen relationships and affinity, and especially for our family and alumni of Carthage College.
We're speaking with Adam Koenig, who is Director of Advancement and Alumni Programs at Carthage College. He's been there since February of 2019, and he is largely responsible for the commencement exercises that just took place that were like nothing ever seen on the campus of Carthage before, and I suspect maybe not seen anyplace else ever. We'll get to that in just a second. Adam, just a quick word about this COVID-19 pandemic period, which has been a good half of your time at Carthage. What kind of a difference has it made? I mean, I should think a profound difference in terms of what you do and in terms of creating programs and experiences for people within these very strict restrictions and protocols that the pandemic has necessitated.
Absolutely. And I'm not alone in kind of that, how do we go forward in this unprecedented circumstance. You know, many faculty and staff members across campus had to be equally innovative of how they moved forward educating the students here at Carthage. And, you know, reflecting back of where we were at the beginning of the pandemic and where we are now, so many positive lessons learned of how to deliver experiences, whether those are virtual or hybrid experiences, in a more sophisticated manner, and a manner that can reach more people regardless of their location. And many lessons learned that we will continue post-pandemic. A lot of things that, you know, looking back, it's those moments of like, why didn't we always do it this way? Mm-hmm. And again, I'm not alone in kind of that reflection on all the ways we've innovated. You know, I think I would say, even though this year has been very challenging, the silver lining is all the opportunities we were able to pursue and the things that we will now do going forward.
Before we talk about commencement 2021, just completed, Let's spend a minute or two talking about Commencement 2020, which of course occurred at towards the beginning of this terrible pandemic and at a time when things had to be very, very restricted. Explain to our listeners what semblance of a commencement there was in the spring of 2020 at Carthage.
Sure. So, you know, our memories of timelines sometimes skew a little bit when we think about it, but the kind of that hard stop of that pandemic where that really peaked was, you know, 5 weeks before our commencement. So that ceremony had already been planned for over 9 months. And there were discussions of how we could pivot. There were a lot of other institutions that were just kicking the can, being very, very vague. But, you know, working with President Swallow and other leaders across campus, you know, the Carthage way is to communicate clearly and honestly. And we really wanted to be able to recognize these students to the best of our ability, given those circumstances. So what we did was a commencement in two parts. First, we had a virtual commencement with all of the traditional speakers from the distinguished faculty that's selected by the students, the distinguished senior who gives the class address. We also conferred degrees and were able for the deans to say everybody's name, and we had a slide with their photos and their degrees so they could be in their caps and gowns at home celebrating with their families. And then 2 weeks later, we followed that up with a diploma drive-through where it was a parade where those students who were able to come back with their families and their vehicles could drive down Alford Park Drive with faculty and staff lining the route, waving and cheering them on, where they could pick up their diploma, be welcomed into the Alumni Association. And then the end of the route stopped right in front of our statue featuring President Lincoln, where we had President Swallow there, where they could pose to get that photo, like what traditionally happened in commencement, just they were in their vehicle. So we made it as fun as we could, while also, you know, making sure safety was centered in that experience.
Very good. So you obviously had some time, you and others, to think about commencement 2021. First of all, through the course of this school year, did you ever harbor serious hopes that we would be back to normal by the end of the school year, or pretty much from the beginning of the planning process, did you and others know that this commencement could not be like the normal commencements of 2019 and earlier?
Sure. Well, I think one part of my job is always to be optimistic, right? It's just part of the work. You almost have to be. So I think, you know, there was always that through line, well, in 90 days, it will be radically different. In 90 days, it will be radically different. And I think when we got to December of last year, we came together and we said, all right, we're in a situation where it seems like this emerging narrative may come through with access to vaccines and what that means, but we're truly not in control. So instead of being reactive and responsive, how can we be proactive in structuring this experience where, regardless of what the outcome is, we have the flexibility to still execute this in a safe way, rather than, you know, changing the event date or disappointing families? Because commencement truly is a really special experience where people come in from all over the country, and it's very, very important, both for the graduates and their families. And that was the first thing we said. We said, we are going to do this on campus, we're going to do it in person, and the graduates' families are going to be there. And from there, how can we step back and make this happen? And that was the seed that was planted that ultimately resulted into the experience that happened a couple weekends ago.
I think one of the things that one of my only regrets about commencement 2021 is that it is not very easy to describe to somebody who wasn't there. And maybe you've done this enough that you'll have better luck than I do just verbally describing what it was like for graduates and their families who came and participated in this. So give it a shot, Adam. Describe to our listeners without any visuals What?
Well, it was also difficult for me in the planning stages to also describe what was going to be happening. And, you know, I have so much respect for President Swallow and the executive staff for just having the trust to be like, you know what, we don't quite know what this is, but it sounds great. Let's do it. Let's go all in. And, you know, without that kind of framework and encouragement, it never would have happened. But essentially,
that's a really good point. I'm so glad you said that, Adam. It never really occurred to me, but it's not like you were in a position to say, this is what we should do, I think, and this is exactly what it will look like, and are you with me or are you against me? I mean, in a sense, this probably was a matter of trust, particularly because you came up with something that was so incredibly innovative and really for the moment. Describe to our listeners what you created.
Sure. So we took back and we looked at commencement and we're like, what are all the elements that are involved in that? And kind of put them in a row. And we're like, now how can we put these back together in a way that is safe? And, you know, it was with the college's guidelines of social distancing. So first, we created a program for graduates only. The majority of our graduates are already on campus. So that event was on Friday evening. It was socially distanced in our field house where we had, you know, all the graduates come in. And we, again, had all the traditional speeches from the distinguished senior to the faculty member to the conferring of their degrees. That program, of course, was live streams for families at home. That event also graduated our mascot of 24 years, Torchy. So he received his diploma that evening and was sent off with great fanfare. And that event was then followed up with 2 days of this experience we're talking about, where we invited the graduates and 5 guests to participate in an extended procession line that then ended at the commencement stage where they received their diploma. And how we did that is we segmented our graduates into groups of 50, where these students and their guests would arrive every hour for 13 hours stretched over 2 days, where they would go through this really immersive experiential procession line. And, you know, involved light displays, interactive displays, where faculty were wishing them well. We had graduation stations where they're welcomed to the Alumni Association. They received their academic honors. And they were able to walk a red carpet with a giant video wall with, you know, all these photo opportunities. So it was really just this joyful, exciting experience that, you know, the pomp and circumstance wasn't until the very end. And the lead up to that, it was 25 minutes of pure joy and excitement, celebrating their achievements. And as they entered our Siebert Chapel, we had that traditional commencement music that was recorded by our ceremonial band with the president on the stage, with the provost or the deans announcing their names, with faculty in the pews cheering them on. And the families, every family got that front row seat to see their student get that diploma and cross the stage. And it was just such a powerful experience, and it actually exceeded all of my own expectations. And I'm just so thrilled for our graduates and families that they just had such a positive experience after such a difficult year.
Right. Do you recall what kind of the initial spark of the idea was? I mean, had you, for instance, done something, anything like this in your previous work for H&M? Or was there any other way in which this idea sprang into being out of anything you had done before or seen or experienced? Or did this just kind of, in a sense, happily come out of nowhere? I mean, the kernel of the idea of this extended procession for everybody.
Yeah, well, I think if you take a step back with, you know, the experiences I've had, H&M actually was the founder of the idea of designer collaborations with mass market retailers that are now commonplace, where you hear, you know, X designer is, you know, making a range for Target, or this celebrity is releasing this product line. You know, H&M was really the founder of that idea. And, you know, it happened on an annual basis. And in major markets where these product ranges were launched, you know, the stores themselves or areas of the stores were really transformed into these, you know, shop and shops, they call them, where, you know, it's a really elevated experience with this elevated product range that was really an entire experience around the range of clothing. So, you know, doing that for such a long time, you know, I understand how you can transform spaces into something else and create this immersive experience. And when thinking about how we can do commencement, you know, over the past year, you see, you know, a lot of people doing drive-throughs or drive-ins to do events, and the idea of moving through as the separate unit. And I was like, you know, we have the luxury of having all of these connected facilities that have really beautiful spaces that if groups of people were able to walk through those leading to our chapel, we could do something with that. And then from there, you know, it was all, you know, downhill, I guess you would say, from that initial thought.
One of the things that most impressed me, Adam, was the transformation of, for instance, the upstairs hallway of Johnson Art Center, which is the building where I work when I'm at Carthage, and upstairs from where my office is. And with some draping and with some lighting, I mean, you would never guess that that was the same ordinary hallway that I'd walk down, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of times. What kinds of things did you think about in terms of the transformation of some of these spaces to be something new and dramatically different from what they normally are?
I'm somebody who is highly collaborative when I work. So I will gather together my core team, who are both internal Carthage employees, and then our fabulous local vendors who support us in the Christmas festival for that kind of experience. And, you know, I give them that big idea of what I'm thinking. And then I give them the space to do what they do best, where they're like, okay, give me some time and I'm going to come back with a rendering. Or, you know, I really think we should do X, Y, or Z. And I really just try to empower and enable those people to then come together with all their different areas of equipment and lighting and specialities to create something that's greater than the sum of its parts. You know, I really approach this work from kind of a curatorial kind of perspective, where, you know, it's my job to have, you know, that greater sense of that narrative or experience, and then empowering each of those, you know, vendors or artists in this case to just do what they do best. And I think, you know, that kind of freedom and creativity really spoke for itself.
Right. Something that struck me was, as the families came through, I was towards my post as one of the faculty volunteers, was towards the very end. I was like two steps away from when they actually go into Siebert Chapel to receive their diploma at the very end. So by the time I was greeting graduates and their families, they'd gone through most of this long processional, and they were so enthusiastic, including the grandparents. And that impressed me because obviously the aesthetic was not particularly designed with grandparents in mind. I mean, you know, in terms of the kind of music that's playing and so on, this was really, of course, designed with the graduates in mind, as it should have been. I mean, that was only right. But I appreciated that the parents and the grandparents were just as swept up in it as the graduates were. And I think that's an impressive achievement on your part, to have pleased everybody who came, or I mean, essentially everybody who came, and not just the graduates themselves, but those who were there to support them.
And that's a really interesting observation, because that's not an uncommon, you know, talking point when designing events is thinking about the individual's age or life experience. And, you know, I'm somebody that, you know, I really encourage people to give, you know, individuals more credit, you know, of, you know, a willingness to experience something that may be really, really new or really, really innovative. I think people, whether they know it or not, really crave and enjoy those experiences. And I think, you know, as we emerge from this, you know, once in a generation pandemic, I think you'll see more and more organizations, you know, mounting these untraditional, you know, really forward-looking experiences to engage their audiences. And I'm just so glad, you know, regardless if it was a graduate or their grandmother who had been to 10 or 12 of these commencements, you know, it was just a positive and joyful experience.
It really was. This is sort of a personal question that I'm sure you can't maybe to a full extent answer, but I'm just curious, it felt expensive. And I mean that as a compliment. I mean, it did not look in any way like it was done on the cheap. I mean, it looked lavish and exciting and wonderful. Was it expensive compared to a normal commencement?
Well, I harken back to a really great relationship with our vendors who, you know, have been great partners, and we made sure to engage throughout the pandemic. They also helped us produce our Christmas festival. And part of the reason of why we decided to do that is so we could continue to support our vendors who were severely impacted. You know, no one was doing events, and we were so proud to be able to support these small businesses. And they paid us back in kind for that thought and care, or they really worked within our budgets. And I think, you know, something that people don't understand about commencements is a large side of the cost goes into the labor of setting up these events for thousands of thousands of people. So those costs were just redirected to a much smaller footprint. So this kind of format actually was less expensive than a normal commencement. So I think, you know, people realizing that of how we can do more in a more impactful way if we just are willing to think about the formatting, I think has been a major takeaway for conversations that the college is having about what we do going forward.
Well, that's the last question in our last couple minutes. I assume that discussion is already underway about commencement for 2022. And is it too soon for those conversations to be specific enough to address the possibility of some of these elements being retained, even though we hope by May of 2022, life is going to look a lot more normal than it does right now? Or are those discussions still to come?
I think there's already excitement building for what our programming for commencement and beyond looks like post-pandemic. But Carthage truly is a community that's made up of our staff, faculty, our graduates, and families. So that conversation needs to be collaborative. So I think as we, you know, welcome back the class of 2020 on May 22nd to have the same experience, and once we, you know, welcome them back and recognize their achievements on campus, you know, we can start to pivot. And once we get to the fall to welcome in, you know, the 22 graduates and their families to really enter a dialogue of what commencement looks like going forward and what they would like to see.
Very good. Adam Koenig, Director of Advancement and Alumni Programs at Carthage College, and the man more responsible than anyone else, I mean, not solely responsible, but largely responsible for designing and implementing the wonderful commencement activities that took place at Carthage not long ago. Adam, thank you for making time in your busy schedule for this conversation. I'm glad we could share with the community something of the backstage story of how this wonderful event was put together. Thank you for this, and best wishes to you.
Thanks, Greg. It's been a pleasure.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. Part two is coming up in just a moment.
And in this portion of WGTD's morning show, I am making my acquaintance for the first time with a life coach here in southeastern Wisconsin named Andrea Scheuermann. And her story was shared with me by a colleague here at WGTD, Troy McDonald. And to make a long story short, and a story that we'll explore in just a little bit, Andrea Scheuermann experienced a painful loss in her life, which, among other things, prompted her to want to think about her own life in maybe new terms and think about ways in which she could chart a new path for herself and, in a sense, come to a better version of herself. And at least one important element of that better version of herself is to be a life coach and help others in that same sort of journey of discovery and understanding. Andrea Scheuermann, among other things, brings to this work many years of intense work at the Shalom Center. And she has a website, I want to make sure I mention it before I forget, called Grow With Andy. Grow With and then Andy, ANDI.com, in which you can find out about more of the work that she does. Andrea Scheuermann, we welcome you to the morning show.
Hi there. Thank you very much. Nice to be with you today.
I'm glad we can connect today, and I appreciate Troy suggesting this. So let's begin with kind of the background here, and maybe a bit about your life up until you experienced the painful loss of your mother. Sketch kind of what things were like before that loss, and then what that loss represented for you.
Okay, sure. So before my mom got sick with cancer and passed away, I was a very busy mom of, married. I've got three little boys at the time. So I had decided to college and, do something, very important with my life. At that point, I was going to be a teacher when I started, because I helped out in my kids' classrooms. I loved being there. So I thought, okay, great. I can do this. I can be a teacher. Which is obviously a very wonderful field to go into. But then my mom got sick, and it's kind of like my whole world stopped, she was sick for a couple years. In the last year of her life, she lived with us, and it was just completely life-changing. Up until that point, I was very busy, and there was times I was a little cranky because trying to juggle so many things with still three small boys was very challenging. And while losing my mother, it really, really taught me what to focus on and what's not so important, right? It was life-changing for me. It really just stopped me dead in my tracks. And, it really makes you, well, first of all, you realize that, this life is not forever. And I know that sounds silly because we all know that, but until it affects you personally, you don't get it in the same way, right? So going through that process, I always say that as my mother journeyed towards death, so did I. Because I went through a whole transformation through that process with her. It was very transforming. So it just really made me realize that, sounds kind of silly, but that everybody's struggling with something. Again, up until that point, I was so busy and had the blinders on of my own busy world that I wasn't really paying attention to what was going on around me and how other people were being affected in their life. And that really made me realize that everybody's going through something and everybody's struggling, It really brought that to my attention. And it just brought me to a point that I really wanted to help people in a different way. And not that teaching is not helping people, but I wanted to help people through their pain and their suffering. It really got me to that point of wanting to help people that were really going through life, not just necessarily loss of a loved one, but life, right?
Yeah. So What drew you specifically then to this notion of being a life coach? How did you think that would align with this hunger that you had? And at that point, when you made this choice, did you even know that life coaches existed? I mean, was that something you had ever encountered before in your own life?
No. It's kind of a funny story. Right before my mom passed, I actually signed up to volunteer at Women and Children's Horizon because, again, I was feeling this hunger to, like, oh my gosh, life is going to end. I need to get going on some purposeful living, right? And so I signed up to volunteer there, seeked out volunteer opportunities, went there to volunteer, and ended up with a job instead, kind of accidental. Didn't really mean to work there, but I got a job instead. So I felt very much like, you know, it was just aligned perfectly for me to go work there. Nothing I had ever done before, and loved it. Loved the being there for the ladies that needed my help, right? That one-on-one with people was amazing. And ironically, I went into a little store in Kenosha and was just chatting with the lady who owned the store. And I was still early enough in my education at Carthage. And I was kind of changing up my mind. Do I not want to be a teacher? Do I want to go into psychology or sociology or social work? I was doing all that and telling this perfect stranger my story of how I didn't know what I wanted to do at Carthage. And she's the one that actually said to me, "Have you ever thought about being a life coach?" I had not heard of it. I was like, "Huh, what's a life coach?" Went home, looked it up, and everything that it said about what you're, you know, how you would fit into this role was exactly who I was anyway, just I was doing it naturally.
So, well, that put a name to it and in a sense gave you a path to pursue. I noticed on your website, growwithandy.com, that one of the things you say about the role of life coach, at least as you see it, is that you are an accountability partner. Yes. I've not heard that term before, and I really like it a lot. What is behind that term? What does it mean to be an accountability partner?
Well, you know, life coaching is not about me as much as it's about the person I'm coaching. You know, and everybody comes to coaching with obviously a reason that they're there. They have goals and visions and things that they want to do in their life that they are just struggling to move forward. So when somebody comes to me and they have a set of goals and things that they want to work on, we all have a hard time moving forward. You know, I personally, you know, have set goals, right? And then, you know, if no one's holding you accountable to continue on your path and weekly to revisit, you know, like, are you meeting the goal we set last week? Or, you know, have you taken a step forward? If somebody's not holding you accountable, it's harder to do things when you're all on your own. I found that it's hard for me to be accountable to myself when I don't have somebody sitting there saying, but have you done this? Are you working on this? So that's really what an accountability partner is somebody holding you accountable so that you're not on your own.
What would be some other basic elements of the work of life coaching? Although I can see how that accountability piece would be very, very significant. What would be some of the other primary roles that you see a life coach offering to a client?
Sure. Support and guidance. You know, again, when we set goals for ourselves, if we don't have anybody there cheering us on and reminding us that we got this and we can do this, it's hard to do it. I know personally, it's hard for me to do things on my own, you know, but if I've got, you know, people around me that are reminding me on a regular basis that you can do this, then it's a lot easier. It's a lot easier to walk through life with a partner. It is not as easy to walk through life all on your own. And when I say partner, you know, yes, we have husbands and wives and friends and cousins and sisters and brothers, but you know, when it's somebody who's related to you, it's not always the same when it comes to setting those goals and those visions and those dreams. So really it's about having a partner, having a support system, having somebody who will guide you along your path. Because again, coaching is about, it's about the person you're coaching and what their vision and their dreams and their goals are. So I am there as a support and a guide and an accountability partner. So that somebody's not going through their changes all by themselves.
How would you generally speaking gauge the state of somebody who comes to a life coach? Generally speaking, is it somebody who is in a situation of crisis of one kind, or does it sometimes make sense for somebody to seek out a life coach when one isn't necessarily facing a dramatic fork in the road or a very difficult choice or whatever? I mean, at what point in one's life does it make sense to perhaps seek out a life coach? And in a sense, does there need to be a problem in order for a life coach to be appropriate?
Well, I don't think there has to be a problem. You know, there's so many different life coaches. There's life coaches that deal with trauma, you know, so there could be a crisis in somebody's life because there is coaches who focus directly on that. But most life coaches focus on, you know, goals. It's goals that people are setting for themselves, whether it be they want a better relationship or they are really struggling to get into a healthy lifestyle, or they are wanting purpose in their life and they just not sure which direction to go. So usually it's about a person who is pretty secure in their life, in the sense that they are not dealing with deep-rooted psychological issues, right? Because coaches are not therapists. So they are not dealing with those deep-rooted psychological issues, you know, anxieties and depressions. And not that a coach can't work with somebody who is dealing with those things, as long as they have a therapist too. And then a coach is, you know, on the side of that. So, but generally speaking, a person's going to come to a coach when they are wanting to make a change in their life and they are just not sure where to go, how to start moving, how to start taking those steps. So generally it's going to be probably at that point, not as much when they're in trauma and crisis for the most part.
So does one study to be a life coach? Is there certification that one gains? I mean, who can do this? Who's able to access this kind of possibility the way that you did it? Are there hoops to run through or a gauntlet to endure in order to be able to legitimately call yourself a qualified life coach?
Yes. So, I mean, as of right now, there's really, it's kind of like the wild, wild west when it comes to life coaching. It's not like therapists and counselors and social workers where you have to go through all these specific things. So yes, anybody can probably call themselves a life coach, but most people will go through a certification program. So I went through Robbins Madonis training program, which is Tony Robbins training program for coaching. It was a self-certification. I went through it on my own with, you know, turning in my weekly homework and then doing my exam at the end so that they would certify me. So I'm certified through them. There is bigger certifications that I can do with the International Coaching Federation, but I have to start working with clients. And while I'm doing that, then I need to also go through, yes, there is more hoops for me to jump through in order to get that bigger certification, which I do plan to do. But I am just starting out with my business. So, you know, it'll take me a little bit to get there, but that does look a lot better. I think that clients feel a little bit more comfortable just even knowing somebody clearly went through a program to get some training. I mean, you know, I don't personally think I would want to go to somebody who just off the streets call themselves a life coach,
right?
You know,
What was it like to undertake this during COVID, during this pandemic? I suspect that it complicated the situation, but also this pandemic has probably also raised a lot of issues and questions for a lot of people for whom a life coach could really be a tremendous source of help and comfort.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, I mean, I can say it helped me to make the decision. Again, you know, life changed for all of us. And rather than going out and being busy in our lives, right, we were all at home. I mean, I was still working through that time, but at the same token, I still didn't really have much of a social life because I was at home, you know, in between work. So it gives you, again, you're reflecting. I think a lot of people have in this last year have sat home and reflected on, you know what, maybe I don't love my job. A lot of people were out of work or had to work from home. I think a lot of people have really reflected again on their lives because when big things happen, when there's big change in someone's life, just like I can reflect it back to the change of losing my mother. When something big happens in people's lives, it gives them that time to reassess and say, wait a minute, you know, am I really truly happy in what I'm doing? Or is there more? You know, is there something that would make me happier? Is there a purpose for my life? So for me, yes, it helped me to reassess because, again, this has been a long journey for me to come to the coaching, to be able to actually go through the training, you know, and start this business up. It took me a long time to get there from when my mom passed. So I think that, yes. So for me, it helped me going through COVID, helped me again to reassess. And that doesn't mean that I don't love every minute of what I do, but I also have had this dream for 10 years of starting my own business. So it helped me to get there. And I think that it will also help me in my business because people have been reassessing their lives.
Last question. What would you say are the qualities? I'm not saying so much what are your qualities that make you a good life coach, although I suppose you could speak to that the most directly, but I'm actually really curious, even in general, even beyond the specific gifts that you bring to this work, in general, what kind of gifts does it take to be a good life coach? Another way to think of it, I suppose, is what should somebody look for when they are thinking about looking for a life coach?
Sure. I think first and foremost is a good amount of empathy. You know, definitely your strong communication skills. And when I say communication, it doesn't mean that you're just talking, because really it's about listening. It's really about deep listening. You want to find somebody who is really going to hear you, you know, not listen so that they can respond, but hear you. Somebody that can hold the space for your emotions, because it's really, I mean, a lot of times when we're going through changes, we have a lot of emotional stuff that comes with it. You know, a lot of mindset issues, a lot of, you know, maybe negative self-talk. So, you know, you want somebody that's going to hold that space for you to get through all that junk that most of us do carry around with us. I think those are really the most important. I mean, you're going to want to feel comfortable with who you talk to. You know, you want a connection with that person. But truly, bottom line is that we all really want to be heard, you know, and listened to. I mean, isn't that what we all want? Everybody just really wants to be heard when they have, when they're going through anything, you know, like I said, just life changes alone. So I think that that's really what's, honestly, to me, the most important when you're looking for a life coach is somebody that will really, truly see you and hear you.
Andrea Scheuermann is a life coach, and her website is growwithandy.com. And Andy is spelled A-N-D-I, growwithandy.com. Andrea Scheuermann, I appreciate you making time in your schedule for this conversation. To help all of us understand a lot better what a life coach does and what a life coach has to offer. Thanks so much and best wishes to you.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
By the way, Andrea Scheuermann does most of her life coaching at Bodywise Wellness and Spa in Kenosha, located at 4235 Green Bay Road. And Bodywise has an open house coming up on Friday, May 7th from 5 until 8 p.m., in which you can meet some of the practitioners who offer their services there. Tomorrow on the morning show, we will be telling you about a wonderful presentation by Brew City Opera, which features the music, the wonderful songs of Paola Tosti. Also a preview of UW Parkside's production of